To my dearest friends, I am honored to welcome you back once more for today's investigation into the final bulwark which shields the very souls of all humanity. The Imperium is beset upon at all sides by the myriad horrors of the alien, the mutant, and the heretic, clawing at the undefended fringes of our galaxy, desperate for a taste of the power and life held within. Time and time again, these foes will be repelled by the various armies of the Imperium, and their tactics have become rather well honed towards the art of felling orcs or routing the Eldari from a wayward planet. But with that said, there exists an enemy which very few mortals could ever hope to face off against, for they will attack not just your corporeal body, but also your feeble mind and tantalizingly unguarded soul. These, of course, would be the demons. The Neverborn are creatures born of the warp itself, where the emotional energies of every sapient species will coalesce, melding together in that infernal hellscape to produce motes of life molded by the dark gods themselves, to produce new scions eternally loyal to their ruinous masters. Their only goal is to break the thin barriers between our material dimension and of their own realm of eternal pain, so as to invade, bringing naught but chaos in whatever form their patron god represents. Imperial armies, normally resolute against the enemies of man, will quickly crumble as reality itself begins to buckle, and as the greater demons stride through, ripping the souls from their still living victims. Then it will truly seem as though all hope must be lost. Yet there does exist a light in this terrible darkness. Founded as the Emperor's final gift unto humanity, the Grey Knights are the 666th chapter of the Space Marines, and they have been tasked with one thing and one thing only, which is to protect mankind from the horrors of the warp, ensuring that the Imperium never falls to the nightmares of chaos. There are very few within the galaxy who even know of their existence. As an admittance to the mission of the Grey Knights would acknowledge the ever-present threats of the ruinous powers, which is something that the Imperium constantly hides from its citizens. Still, senior lords, Astartes chapter masters, and the agents of the Inquisition are graced with the knowledge of their organization. And should there ever be a demonic incursion too great to handle, then they may send out the vox call they never wish to make, and to summon the Grey Knights to banish the Neverborn back into the warp. In the wake of a successful battle, most of the Imperial survivors who saw the Knights in action will have their minds wiped, though the Inquisition will sometimes deem an execution as being more suitable, simply as a means of keeping the existence of the chapter within the shadows. But with all this secrecy, we really must ask ourselves as to how the Grey Knights keep themselves organized, yet remain as such an effective demon-hunting force. It's no simple feat to maintain a chapter at a constant state of readiness, setting out on missions across the entire galaxy, while still remaining undetected. And so today, my dearest friends, I believe we should investigate the logistics and structure of the mysterious Grey Knights. We will start by going over their command, looking into who actually leads the chapter, before covering the two groups of the Paladins and the Purifiers. After, we will explore the larger Brotherhoods, which in many ways can be equated to the battle companies of a conventional Astartes chapter. But in any case, with all these introductions out of the way, I do believe that it is now time for us to begin. Once more, we must journey back to the frigid moon of Titan, which from orbit appears to be nothing more than a frozen and desolate rock. but within we will find the mysterious and often feared chapter of the Grey Knights. If we were to briefly summarize the overall structure of the Grey Knights, then we could easily compare them to a typical chapter of the Space Marines, in that they consist of around 1,000 brothers, subdivided into compact strike forces known as brotherhoods. With that said, we must be very clear on the point that it is a mere coincidence that their brotherhoods are around the size of a conventional battle company, as the Knights do not follow in the strict tenets of the Codex Astartes. In fact, their chapter was formed long before Guilliman codified the doctrines of the Marines, and so they share very little with their cousin chapters holding a distinct hierarchy and tactics in the field of battle. Of course, this is absolutely necessary for their task, as they have been solely trusted to combat the forces of the Warp, who fight in anything but a conventional manner. The Grey Knights are broadly organized into 8 of the aforementioned brotherhoods, representing the 8 founding members of their organization, which each hold around 100 brothers and their support staff. There are 2 unique orders which exist outside of the brotherhood structure, being of the veteran paladins and of the stalwart purifiers. But the number of Marines in these 2 sects can be quite varied, though we will cover them in more detail later in our sermon. Presiding over each brotherhood will be a figure known as a Grand Master. And again, since there are 8 of them, they are to be seen as the spiritual successors to the 8 chosen by Malkador during the climactic days of the Horus Heresy. Though they each hold command over their own brotherhood, we must first look above them, to the legendary figure of the Supreme Grand Master, who holds the venerable post as the leader to the entirety of the Grey Knights chapter. In some ways, they can be seen as the equivalent to a conventional chapter master, but in reality, there is no compare in the skill set, prestige, nor influence held by the Knight. Within their own chapter, the Supreme Grand Master will sometimes be referred to as the Chapter Lord, and his word is seen as absolute in all matters. This position may only be attained by the worthiest of heroes, the mightiest of champions, and by those who have earned the unwavering respect of their Astartes peers. The reason I say this is that one must receive the unanimous consent of the 8 Grand Masters in order to ascend as the Chapter Lord, which ensures that no unsuitable candidate ever takes dominion over the chapter. This tradition, again, harkens back to the founding of the Grey Knights, representing Malkador's original Council of 8, selecting a member to rule them. But I've mentioned this point several times now, so let us swiftly move on. Once a new lord has been elected, he will rule over the chapter by sitting at the head of an ancient oak table, accompanied by the 8 Grand Masters who saw wisdom in his words. Here, they will guide the chapter, determining overall strategies, arcane doctrines, recruitment plans, and secretive missions, known only to themselves. In truth, much of what is discussed during these meetings will never be heard by any but the Grand Masters themselves, as there are no other individuals in the entire Imperium who would be permitted to join in such an esteemed and critically important assembly. But still, even though the Lord has the final say, it does not mean that he disregards the words of his fellow masters. Each of them has proven themselves as being worthy to sit within that ancient hall, and so it will be from the combined wisdom of the entire council which steers the chapter through this tumultuous time of ending. The Grand Masters truly are legends in their own right. And again, though some people might equate them to the company commanders of the Space Marines, I believe that this would just be a gross oversimplification of their position. To become a Grand Master, one must have served the chapter for centuries, slain an uncountable legion of demons, walked the myriad worlds of the galaxy, and yet remained as a stalwart, unwavering example of the Emperor's honor, never straying down that darkest of paths. But strength is not enough, as a warrior may only be elected to the seat of Grand Master by the Grand Masters themselves. This is a common trope amongst the Grey Knights, but it ensures that they are selecting the mightiest of heroes who best exemplify the teachings of their order, and that none who are unworthy may erroneously rise through the ranks. I apologize for bringing this point up again, though we must acknowledge that it is an important part of their chapter lore. But each Grand Master is to be considered as the spiritual heir to one of the 8 original knights who helped Malkador to establish the chapter. It is even said that those first Grey Knights lent a shard of their character to the Brotherhood that now bears their legacy. And by extension, the modern Grand Masters each carry forward a specific facet of the chapter's sacred mission. We shall revisit this concept when we speak of the Brotherhoods themselves. As for now, we should look to the figures who serve beneath the Grand Masters. Being primarily stationed within the Chapter Council, it is somewhat rare for the Grand Masters to step out into the field, and rather, this honor will typically fall to the knights known as Brother Captains. The Grey Knights are very few in number, and are frequently deployed in small, highly concentrated strike forces, but the Brother Captain will be entrusted to command with complete autonomy and with the absolute authority of the entire chapter at his back. These captains are formidable leaders, typically promoted from among the most successful Justicars and veterans after hundreds of victorious campaigns. Even while the Grand Master oversees the broader mission, the Brother Captain will coordinate the chapter forces on the ground, directing the various strike squads through the field to ensure the total banishment of any demonic beasts. I would be remiss to speak of the Grand Masters without at this point mentioning the current man who holds the post of Chapter Lord, and this would be the figure of legend known as Kaldor Drago. By the grace of the Emperor, Drago has held the chapter's mantle since the year 901 of the 41st millennium, when he heroically assumed command over a strike force during the chaotic Battle of Cornovin. There, on that demon-haunted field, Drago's predecessor, the Supreme Grandmaster Geronitan, was slain by none other than the fallen Primarch Mortarion, child of the Emperor, and now eternally enslaved to the malign will of Grandfather Nurgle. Brother Captain Drago, then of the Third Brotherhood, consumed by a righteous fury, charged the unclean Primarch and did what many once believed to be impossible. He bellowed out the true name of Mortarion, bequeathed by the Emperor's own divine insight, shattering the demon's physical form. In a final act of defiance against the dark gods, Drago carved Geronitan's name into Mortarion's rotten heart. And though the fallen Primarch was promptly dragged back into the nightmare of the warp, Drago's deed would remain as an insult, which Mortarion would never forget. Following this devastating battle, Drago was acclaimed as the new Supreme Grand Master by the Chapter Council, though the prognosticars upon Titan felt this as being too fast, as they detected a sudden and irreversible shift in the fate of their new lord. Scarcely 2 centuries in the future, Drago would be cursed by the ancient demon Makar, to be eternally lost within the labyrinthine hellscape of the warp, a fate which still binds him to this very day. The Grey Knights are headquartered upon the icy moon of Titan, found within the orbit of distant Saturn, and indeed such is the magnificence of their fortress monastery, that I previously dedicated an entire sermon to explore its majesty. But within those hallowed halls there lies a chamber most grand, known simply as the Hall of Champions. This is the domain of the Paladins, greatest of champions to the Grey Knights, each of whom is a warrior without peer, a hero of not only the chapter, but of the entire Imperium. If the Grey Knights as a whole are the Emperor's blazing sword against the demons of chaos, then the Paladins are the sharpened point of the blade, consisting of the boldest, most noble, and indomitable of brothers to ever wear the chapter's silvered armor. Many within the Brotherhoods would one day aspire to join in these hallowed ranks, yet few will ever be considered, and a fewer still will ever attain the honor of treading within that hall as a newly minted paladin. The Paladins should be considered as an inner order of knights. They are a cadre of champions distinguished by deeds and skill far above even the veteran brothers of the chapter. There are only around 100 paladins in total, but they represent the chapter's martial elite. And as I previously mentioned, they are the exemplars of what it means to be a Grey Knight. Yet becoming a paladin is not as simple as receiving a promotion, and rather, it is a rare ascension which requires a Grey Knight to prove himself in ways that border on the realm of mythic. They do not believe that one may forge himself in battle as a warrior, and that war simply tempers the fighting spirit of men who were born to achieve a great many deeds of worth. As such, to become a paladin, it is not as simple as fighting 1,000 battles, and instead, the prospective knight must set out on a perilous journey to complete 8 quests, proving his character as pure and his cause as true. Each quest is more daunting than the last, and have been designed to push the battle brother to his absolute limits. The first may sound somewhat comical, but the knight will need to spend a day and a night within the haunted caves found below Mount Anarch, without losing one's mind to the terrors of the dark. None know of exactly what lurks within those shadowy depths, but it must be a nightmare beyond compare, if it may reduce a stalwart Grey Knight to a gibbering mess of fear and anguish. Next, he must tread the forbidden vaults of the Sanctum Sanctorum, matching his will against an unsleeping demon, imprisoned within an accursed tome, known as the Abialak. If his soul survives such an ordeal, then he has proven that he may withstand the trials of mental fortitude, yet must now display his prowess in the martial arts of the Marines. He must take a pilgrimage to the doomed moon of Tethys, which is also found within Saturn's orbit, to locate the site known as Lancel's tomb, where he will remove his armor, abandon his weapons, and hunt down one of each of the demons who serve the dark gods of the warp. It is quite peculiar that this moon, being so close to Holy Terra, is in fact infested with demons. Yet the Grey Knights seem to maintain a strict barrier, preventing the beasts from ever escaping into the wider soul system. In any event, it is a stupendous feat for an unarmored marine to slay a plague-bearer of Nurgle, a bloodletter of Khorne, a flamer of Tzeentch, and a demonette of Slaanesh in unarmed combat, though the brother must also retrieve a trophy to prove that he saw the deed through to the bitter end. The subsequent quests only grow more difficult from here, culminating in the final trial, where the aspirant brother is supplied with the true name to one of the 666 of the most powerful demons to ever intrude upon our material realm. He must then set out alone on his quest, armed only with a Nemesis Force sword, to hunt down this monstrous hellspawn, grant it with the touch of a true death, and to forever banish it from the face of our galaxy. To face one of the mightiest denizens of the warp, one who may have bested entire armies, and to destroy it with no external support, is a test which very few could ever attempt, let alone survive. It is little wonder that only the boldest and most steadfast of Grey Knights can ever hope to become paladins, and though many may try, almost none will ever succeed. It is almost unheard of for an aspirant to abandon the quests once begun, for that would be the mark of eternal shame. Yet the cost of pursuing them is so high that the chapter's paladins remain as an ever-exclusive brotherhood. Those who die in the pursuit of glory are honored as martyrs, but those rare few who prevail will have emerged tempered like the finest steel, ready to take their seat within the Hall of Champions. If the aspirant returns victorious, then he will have proven himself as an incorruptible and indomitable warrior, well deserving of being promoted to the vaunted rank of a paladin. After a period of triumphant feasting and solemn benediction, the new warrior will leave behind his former brotherhood, released from duty by his prior superiors. From this point on, he will answer directly to one of the Grand Masters, taking on a unique role as bodyguard, champion, and tactical advisor. This final point is perhaps the most important, as their previous quests will have taken them throughout the galaxy and into the very warp itself, and this experience will be truly invaluable to the Grand Masters, who sometimes spend several decades upon Titan without ever leaving. The Paladins are chiefly led by a figure known as the High Paladin, with the incumbent individual going by the name of Koyar Tempus, though we know very little about his character, nor even of the role of one who holds this title. Still, the 100 active Paladins are organized into squads, typically of between 5 and 10 individuals, led by a Paragon, who has been designated to command their unit, after proving themselves as being of an outstanding tactical mind. A full squad, replete in their gleaming Terminator armor, will form a truly impenetrable shield, which very few, save for the mightiest of demon lords, will ever hope to successfully assail. According to chapter records, they also boast 12 venerable dreadnoughts who slumber within the Hall of Champions, until, of course, their eternal rest is disturbed so that they may be called into battle once more. Next to the Paladins, there exists a second order within the Grey Knights who, above all else, exemplify the unwavering sanctity and righteous purpose of the chapter. These would be the Purifiers, who are oath-bound to shield the most solemn and haunted vigil upon Titan, being of the mysterious depths of the Chambers of Purity. This curious crypt is buried deeply beneath the surface of Titan, connecting the fortress monastery to the ancient caverns which pock the deepest interior of Mount Anak. The Order of the Purifiers is a small yet incredibly elite cadre who are entirely distinct from the 8 conventional brotherhoods. Numbering no more than a few dozen at any given time, the Purifiers are only selected for duty if they have proven themselves as possessing a truly outstanding sense of spiritual fortitude, a trait which will be absolutely necessary for their future vigil. Every Grey Knight is, by definition, pure of heart, as only those who are utterly untainted by chaos may survive the chapter's training. Yet among such paragons, the purifiers are certainly exceptional. To an outsider, they could be described as the spiritual heart of the Grey Knights, and their mere presence has been noted to be an anathema to the monstrous horrors of the warp. The dark taint of a demonic fiend will wither and burn away at the mere touch of a purifier, such is the incandescence of their shining soul. Each brother carries with him a bright, unyielding flame, a psychic fire of sanctity to surround him like a blazing wreath. Though usually invisible, during times of battle, this can manifest as a literal aura of Empyrean flame, or as a burning halo of azure and white. But even at rest, it is said that the eyes of a purifier will burn with the fervent black fires of their devotion. This all comes with a heavy burden, as those who are so pure are often seen by their brothers as being rather dour or taciturn, so they would fit the bill of being stoic warrior monks, more than of any other marine. It is not an easy path for one to be inducted into the purifiers, and in truth, there is no set program through which one may join. It is not like with the paladins, where a brother must complete his arduous quests. As in this case, there is no single deed, nor even string of feats which will earn one the right to tread through the chambers of purity. A Grey Knight could serve for several centuries as a valorous, shining example of the Emperor's will, slaying a countless tally of monstrous demons without ever being known to the mysterious order. For you see, to be inducted into this brotherhood, one must be hand-chosen by the purifiers themselves, and they only look for one trait above all else, which is to be unquestionably pure in the face of chaos. They need to know for sure that your soul will never be strained nor manipulated by the temptations of the warp, and that even in the face of an incomprehensible power, that you will stand resolute as the final bulwark to shield all of mankind. This is all a bit confusing, since the Grey Knights are chosen during their initial recruitment to be incorruptible. So at a basic level, we should see the purifiers as the creme de la creme in terms of brothers who may resist the sway of the ruinous powers. No Grey Knight will ever fall to chaos, but that does not mean they will never be tested. Yet for the purifiers, this malign energy will be simply rebuked by the light of their souls, washing away like blood off of an orc's back. But in any case, so stringent are they with their recruitment standards that there are rarely to be more than a few dozen purifiers at any one time. And in fact, as it so stands today, there are only 44 of their order led by their castellan, Garen Crow. Even as the galaxy is consumed by chaos, one may believe that it would be beneficial to expand their ranks, yet the purifiers would never dare to slacken their requirements, lest it compromise the unwavering sanctity of their order. As I mentioned, their primary station is to be found within the Chambers of Purity upon Titan, where they are tasked with watching over the accursed caverns to maintain the ancient warding runes and to banish any Empyrean machinations which dare to intrude upon our material realm. It has long been said that an unknowable evil lurks beneath Mount Anarch. But so obscure is this force that we don't even know if it is a creature of the warp or something far older and far darker. Some believe that the presence of this entity was the reason to which Malkador and the Emperor chose Titan as the home of the Knights, as the untarnished chapter would ever be present to banish the horrors should they ever rear their ugly heads. Alternatively, others posit that this malign force infiltrated Titan when the moon was shrouded within the warp. According to chapter lore, the truth of the matter is recorded Within the Iron Grimoire, an ancient tome which covers the entire founding tale of the Knights, though only the Supreme Grand Master may explore its pages, and he would never dare to share its secrets with any, not even of those from his own chapter. In any event, from time to time, the Chambers of Purity will shake, casting great quakes through the rest of the fortress, as the purifiers work to contain the writhing entity, lashing out in its desperate attempt for freedom. Some believe the souls of those claimed by the Grey Knights will manifest in this crypt, seeking their revenge, while others claim that the entity is calling forth the spectral remnants of defeated demons. But thus far, we have no concrete evidence on which case is true. I mentioned that this order is led by Castellan Crowe, who, in addition to standing at the head of the purifiers, also serves as their champion, a title which I shall expand upon in our next chapter. Even amongst their ranks, Crowe is to be seen as a flawless soul, so steadfast against the forces of chaos that he has taken on the burden of wielding the tainted sword, known as the Black Blade of Antwyr. This demon weapon will ever tempt its bearer, but if that mortal ever tastes even a mote of its ruinous power, then their soul will be forever tainted and consumed by the inbound hellspawn. It was considered as being too dangerous to leave upon Titan, and so, being the incorruptible bastion that he is, Castellan Crowe vowed to carry the weapon into battle, ever tempted by its powers, but ever resistant to its foul call. The purifiers rarely leave Titan, but when they are called upon in the field, they are to act as the chapter's blazing spearhead against the hellish demon spawn. It is said that during a battle that their holy fire is drawn towards any trace of evil, and that very few are known to be able to resist the psychic aura of these purified warriors. Mighty demons will fall to ash. Traitorous soldiers will spontaneously combust in a corona of fire, and chaotic effigies will burst into roiling tempests of azure energy, casting out bolts of lightning to purify the battlefield and to restore some semblance of order. But through the flames will walk the purifiers, unburnt and untarnished, force blades held aloft, ready to bring the unwavering wrath of the Emperor to those who dared stand against his will. The main fighting strength of the Grey Knights is organized into 8 brotherhoods, which are cohesive strike forces that can be seen as analogues to the companies of a traditional Astartes chapter, yet are deeply rooted in the ancient lore of the demon hunters. Each brotherhood is a self-contained army, consisting of roughly 100 Grey Knights, though this number can fluctuate with losses, and it does not include the Brotherhood's officers, nor of its vehicles and support staff. I previously mentioned that the 8 Brotherhoods hearken back to the 8 founding members of the chapter, who had been hand-chosen by Malkador, as men of outstanding character, skill, and determination. Each brotherhood is led by one of the chapter's grand masters, who, as we discussed, will take on the role of strategic commander and spiritual guide to his knights. He may reorganize the 100 Marines as he sees fit, outfitting them with a varied range of specialist equipment, so as to make them more effective against the specific demons who they will be expected to face off against. In day-to-day operations, the Grand Masters will typically delegate command of the Brotherhood to the Brother Captains, who will be tasked with leading the Grey Knights in the field of battle. Within each Brotherhood, the organization is always kept highly flexible, yet is robust enough to ensure that the strike force may remain effective, even if it sustains heavy losses. The smallest operational unit will be the Grey Knight Strike Squads, which are made up of 10 brothers led by a sergeant holding the rank of Justicar. These units can be further subdivided into two combat squads, providing a greater sense of strategic flexibility whilst allowing them to cover a larger area of the battlefield without requiring the deployment of additional troops. This also means that if the Grey Knights suffer heavy casualties, that they will still be able to maintain their operational abilities, either by dividing their units or by merging shattered squads together into smaller combat squads. The composition of these strike squads can vary quite wildly between units, and a typical Grey Knight deployment will contain a broad mix of squad types so as to allow for maximum tactical flexibility. Strike squads, for example, will be the backbone of the Brotherhood, consisting of 10 versatile battle brothers armed with Nemesis Force weapons, storm bolters, and their own psychic might, allowing them to be capable of both long-ranged and close-quarters combat. Terminator squads, meanwhile, will represent the chapter veterans, who, as the name suggests, will stride into battle wearing ancient suits of Terminator armor. They typically carry heavier weapons, including force staves, demon hammers, and psi cannons, allowing them to crush the strongest foes or hold the most critical of objectives. As an interesting point, the Grey Knights possess enough of the treasured suits of armor to outfit nearly the entire chapter in Terminator armor. But their deployment is typically reserved for tactical situations, where the heavy suit may prove pivotal in shifting the tides of battle. Interceptor squads are the fast attack units of the Brotherhoods, being equipped with personal teleportation devices, allowing them to shunt through real space in rapid bursts, leaping through the warp to appear in tactically advantageous positions. Naturally, these individuals must hold an impressive sense of personal fortitude, since they will be temporarily traveling through the Immaterium without the protection of a Geller field, putting them at great risk of being snatched by a covetous demon. It is for this reason that many of the aforementioned purifiers were once known to serve within interceptor squads, as it was from their constant exposure to the warp that they were able to prove their unwavering resilience. Purgation squads, however, are the heavy weapons teams of the Grey Knights. They will wield up to 4 of the chapter's most precious ranged weapons, including the burning incinerators, the mysterious silencers, and the great psi cannons. They excel at slaying hordes of lesser demons, partly due to the fact that some of these weapons will fire out rounds imbued with negative psychic energy, which may banish the Neverborn back into the warp from just one shot. All Grey Knights, whether belonging to a strike, interceptor, or purgation unit, are trained to the highest possible standard. But quite interestingly, we do not often see brothers moving from discipline to discipline. The reason for this is that the practices needed for certain roles are so specific that once one has mastered their art, that it can be quite tricky to put it aside and to take up a new role. The interceptors, for instance, will have become so comfortable leaping through the warp, remaining on their toes as they sprint through a battlefield, that it will be challenging for them to adapt to the bulkier stances required for ranged combat within the purgation units. Supporting each brotherhood will be the specialist officers and assets, of which there are often many. Each will have one or more chaplains, who are the spiritual wardens of the Angels of Death, leading their battle brothers in prayer, tutoring the chapter initiates, and delivering sometimes fatal punishments to those who fail in their required disciplines. On a battlefield, they bellow out with fervent calls for glory, rallying the incorruptible brothers together as they face off against demonic lords so ancient that they predate the existence of the very Imperium. Librarians will also be assigned to the Brotherhoods, and though all of the Grey Knights are potent psychers, the agents of the Sanctum Sanctorum are known to truly stand head and shoulders above the rest. They have access to almost the entire wealth of the forbidden lore of the chapter, which includes near every demonic secret accrued through the Imperium's long history. Thus, the librarians will invoke ancient rituals, unspeakable incantations, and long-forgotten magics to rend the powers of a demon from out of their immaterial form and to painfully banish them back into the warp. Each brotherhood will also boast a cadre of tech marines who maintain the chapter's war gear, vehicles, and oversee the mind-wiped servitors of their fortress. They work somewhat closely with the tech priests found upon Deimos, which was stolen from Mars's orbit to serve as the personal forge moon for the Grey Knights, though the two will seldom share in the secrets of their highly treasured equipment. Apothecaries are present too, healing their battle brothers from wounds which are most often inflicted by the foul weapons and energies of the warp. The gene seed of the Grey Knights is said to have been sourced from the Emperor himself, so it is a truly vital task for these individuals to recover the priceless genetic material should a knight ever fall in battle. Knights known as Ancients will carry the banners of their brotherhood, with their lives being devoted towards memorizing the heroic deeds of their order, whilst also maintaining the venerable chapter archives. During a battle, should the knights ever falter, then the ancient will rise up, holding the banner up high, shouting out the names of the chapter's ancient heroes, channeling their memory so as to fuel the surviving members of the strike force into carving out their own name in the annals of the Brotherhood. Last, but certainly not least, amongst the Brotherhood's many specialists, will be the rare figures known as the Brotherhood Champions. At his core, this is a single knight from each Brotherhood who has forsaken all ranged armaments to devote himself entirely to the art of perfecting his skills in close quarters combat, serving as the bodyguard and dueling champion to the senior brother captain. Above all others, he is the exemplar to the martial prowess of the Grey Knights, representing the absolute pinnacle of what a brother may achieve in the art of demon-hunting warfare. He must be trained to perfectly utilize every weapon in a chapter's armory, being just as deadly when wielding a force glaive, as he is when equipped with two Nemesis Falchions in each hand. With that said, the humble Nemesis Force Sword is often the champion's weapon of choice, as it provides him with the greatest flexibility when engaged in a duel, being able to press forward on a daring offensive slash or to deftly parry and counter-strike back on the defensive. Without hesitation, any Brotherhood champion will be willing to sacrifice himself to save his brother captain, though it is exceedingly rare to find an opponent who is powerful enough to strike down a duelist of this magnitude. With that said, if the champion is ever slain, then it is said that his grossly incandescent willpower will coalesce into a field of psychic energy to be released as an explosive pulse through the field, burning away any demons in a wave of sanctified flame as his final act of glory. But returning to the organizational structure of the Knights, it is quite rare for an entire Brotherhood to be deployed at once. A Grand Master will usually confer with the prognosticars upon Titan to assess the threat level of whatever incursion they are responding to before assembling an appropriately sized strike force so as not to risk overcommitting to a battle, which could have been won with a single squad. If deemed as necessary, then the master may also call for assistance from the paladins or purifiers before deciding whether he will hand over command of the army to a steadfast brother captain, or if he will don his own suit of armor, and finally take to the field. Some engagements may require the deployment of heavy tanks, which will be purified by the tech marines and tech priests of Deimos, anointed with warp-repellent wards and equipped with demon-banishing psi rounds before being dispatched. If it is expected for there to be several greater demons, or demon princes on the field, then they may even request for the deployment of a magnificent walker, known as a Nemesis Dreadknight. These towering relics are precious treasures to the chapter, consisting of a mighty adamantium frame, standing approximately 6.5 meters in height, powered by a compact plasma reactor, with the entire design thought to have been first drafted during the fabled days of the Dark Age of Technology. In any event, its titanic limbs will be controlled by a Grey Knight, who will sit within the command harness, allowing him to effortlessly pilot the Great Walker, essentially amplifying his own strength and size by several orders of magnitude. Each arm will end with a comically named Dread Fist, with the left typically being mounted with some of the Grey Knight's heaviest of weapons, including heavy psi cannons or Gatling silencers capable of spitting a truly awe-inspiring salvo of psychic rounds downfield. The right arm, however, will hold either a Nemesis Great Hammer or a Great Sword. A single strike with one of these may be enough to banish an empowered greater demon back into the hellscape of the warp, potentially saving the lives of dozens of foot-bound knights who would be hard-pressed to seize victory alone. Despite the Dreadknight pilots being some of the most honored and vaunted of warriors, at this point I would be remiss to not mention that the design of these units is surely reminiscent of the Terran baby carriers of old, and that perhaps their comical aesthetic just doesn't match their intended might. The entire history of the Grey Knights has been shrouded in secrecy ever since its first inception, and though it was founded to act as the final bulwark to protect all of mankind from the horrors of the warp, most will never be made aware of its existence. Yet, for those who have walked within their fortress monastery and trodden beneath the icy moon of Titan, they will have found a chapter utterly steeped in ancient tradition and truly forbidden lore. Every facet of the chapter, from the August Council of the Grand Masters to the paladins within their storied Hall of Champions, to the vigil of the purifiers in the chambers of purity, and to the adaptable strength of the eight brotherhoods, it has all been deliberately crafted to serve a sacred purpose. The Grey Knights are few in number, but their impact on the galaxy and on the Imperium at large should be seen as truly incalculable. Where any other force might succumb to corruption or fear in the face of the demon, the Grey Knights stand untarnished as the final impregnable wall of faith and steel. Clad in the blessed armors and armed with weapons wrought from the rarest alloys, they strike as a shining silver arrow, wreathed in the Empyrean flames of their order to illuminate mankind's darkest hour. When a demonic incursion erupts, and when the unprepared Imperials inevitably falter, then, and only then, will the Knights be called upon, silently departing from Titan, only to manifest upon a battlefield in an explosion of psychic fire. We mortals, for the most part, will never see them coming nor going, yet the aftermath will be clear, as where once a nightmare festered will have been replaced by naught but scorched earth and an eerie silence where the great evils of the warp were resoundingly banished. But with this, my dearest friends, I do believe that we have now come to our end. Thank you all so much for listening to this sermon on the Grey Knights in its entirety, and I do hope that you enjoyed our little tour. For now, however, as I close this chapter once more and leave you for another week, I must wish you all with a very warm goodbye.